Hello, fellow sleuths. I am Kathy.
And I'm Michael.
You are listening to A Southern Sleuth. Hello, fellow sleuths. Today we're telling the story of Chandra May. Chandra grew up in the Pea Ridge community of Scott County, Mississippi, near the city of Forest. In 1986, Forest had a population of about 5,000, and Pea Ridge is just a little area outside of the city, so small I couldn't even find any population information. Her parents, Richard and Janelle, thought they would never have biological children, and they adopted a son in 1967. They named him Tim. But life had a surprise in store for the Mays, and Janelle became pregnant soon after the adoption. Chandra was born February 26, 1968. Her father was often away from home due to his job as a riverboat captain on the Mississippi River, but by all accounts, the children didn't suffer due to that. Chandra was a high school senior in 1986 at Leak Academy, a private school in Madden, Mississippi, and was a very good student. She worked at McDonald's in Forest after school, which was a popular job for high school kids at the time. Remember how back then fast food places were full of high school kids as employees?
Yep.
I grew up in a rural area, and you either worked at a fast food place or a drugstore in the closest city or on a farm. Michael, you grew up in a bigger city, so y'all probably have more exciting options.
Yeah. I mean, there was lots of jobs. I think one of my first jobs I remember was throwing a local newspaper. It was just advertisements. It was called Ad Pack, and my neighborhood had about, I think I had 120 of those in my neighborhood, so I threw out 120 of those weekly. So just to give you an idea, man, it was a little small area of Raleigh. So yeah, lots more jobs for sure.
It was cold and raining the evening when Chandra clocked in at the McDonald's, 6 o'clock on February 4th. They weren't very busy, probably due to the weather, and the manager had her clock out just before 7:30 due to the light customer traffic. She hung around a few minutes, just I guess to see if it would pick up, but then she called her mom at 7:40 to say she would be on her way home. She stopped at a nearby TG&Y store to buy a Valentine's card, they assumed for her boyfriend, Tony. TG&Y's were stores, I guess kind of like Dollar General's, where you could buy most anything. We called them dime stores back then.
How do they know for sure that she stopped there?
The receipt was later found in her purse, and it was timestamp 7:45. The card she purchased was one of those oversized ones. I'm imagining it as one of those big ones that were popular then. They were like 2 feet tall. I never got one, which is kind of sad. I don't know if you did.
No,
I didn't. But I remember them very well.
Oh, I'm sorry you didn't get one. I didn't either.
When Chandra didn't arrive home, her mother was very concerned. She spoke with her husband, and he told her to go to her brother-in-law's house, which was very close by, and have him help search for Chandra. I get the feeling the area is like where your mom lives, where it was just kind of surrounded by family.
Right. Yeah. Well, when I grew up in Raleigh, my family lived close together at one point. My mom and her sister, my aunt, lived a block away from my grandparents, but when they moved out to the country in the later years, my grandma lived on the highway, and my mom and aunt split up the property, and they each lived on about 7 acres, but they lived down a path, and then down that same path, their uncle lived. So, you know, it wasn't quite as close as this case, but it was down a path that everybody lived kind of close. Yeah.
Right. If anybody goes down there, they're going to see somebody in your family.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it doesn't go anywhere else.
It just dead ends. That path just dead ends. But, you know, about half a mile down, you'll see my uncle, and then you'll go to my mom's, and then you'll end up at my aunt's, and that dead ends there.
I kind of get the feeling it was like that. It was kind of an area that was basically just her family.
Right.
Now, at 8:30, Chandra's mom goes out to go to her brother-in-law's house, and she sees Chandra's car on the dirt path about 75 yards from Chandra's home. The driver's side door was open, and there was no damage to the vehicle. The keys were in the ignition, and the radio was on, but the engine wasn't running. Mm-hmm. Her purse was inside the vehicle, and there seemed to be nothing out of place, but they did realize later that her driver's license was missing.
What about the card that she bought?
The card was missing also, and I haven't seen any further information about that, so I assume it was never located.
That's definitely odd fact there.
Right, because if it was one of those big cards,
right?
I really that was very confusing to me.
Makes you wonder if either whoever it was for, or maybe it was somebody, I don't know. If there was somebody else in the picture, maybe they were jealous or something, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird that only those two things were missing along with Chandra herself.
Right.
Now, many of the relatives, like I said, live within shouting distance, and no one really heard anything. A cousin said that he saw the lights from a car turning on the road and said that he believed it was Chandra just due to, I guess, the rate of speed. I don't know if she usually came in kind of fast or what he meant by that, but that's what he said. But they didn't hear or see anything else. Unfortunately, when the relatives came upon the car, I guess they didn't realize that it was a crime scene. And I read a newspaper article that said that they actually drove the car to go out and look for Chandra as soon as they found it, and then they moved it back to the house. So that means that any evidence that was in that car was kind of contaminated, and any footprints that may have been on that muddy dirt path are mixed with footprints of the concerned family members.
Boy, I hate that. I bet the family regrets that too. I mean, in the moment making a decision like that, you might have inadvertently messed up some evidence. So,
right, nothing, you know, it's such a small community, and probably a lot of bad stuff didn't happen around there. I'm sure they thought it was a very safe place. So when they saw it, they didn't automatically think, oh my goodness, this is a crime scene. They just thought, well, where did she go and why isn't she back?
Right.
They called her boyfriend, and he was at home, which was several miles away, and he said he had not heard from her and did not know where she was at. So it seemed like that she had just vanished without a trace. The next break in the case came on February 26, when her body was found in Baker's Creek in Bolton, Mississippi, which is between Vicksburg and Jackson. It's about 80 miles from their house. She was found in the creek close to a bridge on Champion Hill Road by an off-duty firefighter while he was out digging on the creek bank for fishing worms.
That is quite a distance away.
Her body was inside a black trash bag, and she was found naked and hogtied.
So, what is hogtied exactly?
Well, it really just means to tie all four of your limbs together like a hog, but usually when they use it to describe people, it's behind the back, like the ankles and the wrists tied together behind your back.
That's what didn't make any sense, because most of the time when I've seen it done on people, they're backwards, but a hog, like if they're in the rodeos, when they're lassoing them up, they're on their back with the limb straight up. So, but you're thinking it's stomach down.
Right, that's calves, but yeah, you've probably seen a hog tied, but you probably haven't seen one lassoed. But
When they're, lassoed up, they're laying on their back with their limbs up.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think you could take a pig and or a calf, right? Could you?
Yeah. No, you can't put it behind their back.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
But that's
so
where, I guess, the term hogtied came from. You're tying all four of the limbs together.
And gotcha.
Her family was notified of the horrible discovery, and it was Chandra's 18th birthday.
Wow. That's very sad.
The initial autopsy yielded inconclusive results, and they had to do a second one. And from that one, the medical examiner determined the cause of death was strangulation. But she had been struck on the head with a heavy object, and there were indications of sexual assault.
Her brother Tim has been active in the web sleuth thread about Chandra's case. Here are some words from his posts. The date of Chandra's abduction was February 4th, 1986, and her body was found on February 26th, 1986, her 18th birthday. But the authorities could never give us an actual date of death. They said it was because of her being in the water. So to this very day, the date of death on her grave marker is blank. The authorities think she had been in the water for some time between 3 to 5 days, and they say she was dead when she was put in the creek.
And speculated that she may have been kept in a refrigerated space before disposal, and that would throw the date of death off. Now, I believe that's only speculation, but I'm not sure if it can be ruled out as a possibility. It does look like she was kept alive for 17 to 19 days before her death, if refrigeration was not used to delay decomposition. The thought of those days with her being held captive are so horrible. What could have been going on? It's just unimaginable.
Also wrote, it is not known to the general public, but several months after the murder, we received a phone call in the early morning hours from a male individual who was apologizing for murdering Chandra. We were never able to trace the call or locate the person who called.
Apparently there was another weird phone call in association with this case, because there was another comment on Web Sleuth that actually replied directly to her brother Tim. And the comment says, I was in Sebastopol, Mississippi back in 1989 or 1990 around Valentine's Day when I first learned about Chandra. The staff at Stevens Florist shared with me the details about her disappearance and murder. The staff was very upset that day because they had received a phone call, a wired order for flowers for your sister. Do you recall this incident? The staff was pretty shaken up and had called the then sheriff's office to report it. I had wondered over the years if this call had ever been traced and if the lead had gone anywhere. Tim stated he had never heard about this phone call. I couldn't get the complete details of whether the call took place around her murder or sometime after. It seemed by the post that it definitely wasn't a call to deliver flowers to her grave, because a florist would not be upset by that. It was very likely just someone who thinks those kinds of pranks are funny.
Man, I wonder if that's somebody you might be able to get up with. I wonder if the florist is still there. Might be. I wouldn't think anybody would forget it. Like, that worked there then would forget getting a call like that, especially with the case that had gone on, but it has been 30 years, so, yeah.
I might give that a shot. Yeah, I haven't done that yet, but I might give that a shot. I like to assume that the law enforcement followed up on it, but...
Well, and they may have, but it may have seemed inconsequential at the time, but however, you know, I don't know. It's definitely odd. Another odd fact.
Although forensic science and crime scene investigation techniques were nowhere near what we see today, there was evidence collected. There was DNA, but I couldn't find anything stating exactly what kind of DNA. And the medical examiner found that she was bound and gagged with a packing tape commonly used in poultry raising and processing facilities common to the region in which she lived.
Yeah, that seems very odd there, because not everybody's going to have access to that, you know, but...
And people said that there's no way someone just stumbled on the location where her body was found. They say you had to have some kind of knowledge of that area.
Oh, and the guy that found her was digging for worms. He was a volunteer or firefighter.
He was an actual firefighter. He was off duty and he found her body. I mean, from what I understand, he was never considered a suspect in any way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it could have been somebody local from where she was from that just happened to know that little area. And then when he got done, he just tried to take her, you know, out of the way so she wouldn't get kind of take it off the trail.
Several people have been mentioned as possible suspects over the years, but none of them have been charged. So I'm going to refrain from naming them right now. If anyone is particularly interested in those names, you can certainly search it up online. I'll have some links on the website that will also give you some of that information. So what we have is a car left with the driver's side door open. Nothing missing except for Chandra, a Valentine's card, and her driver's license. Now, if she had gotten out of the car to willingly go with someone, my thoughts would be she would take her purse and she would close her door. How did someone get her out of the car without any of her nearby family being alerted? But I feel like she must have been taken from that spot. I don't believe the killer drove her car there, although it's possible. But it seems to me there would have to be more than one person involved if that happened. It's been heavily speculated that she was pulled over by someone she thought was law enforcement. Now, with that thought, I would think the flashing blue lights would have been seen by her nearby family. But then I guess it's possible that when she turned onto the drive going up to her house, that they turned the lights off then and they weren't able to be seen from the houses. But then again, okay, how about the radio being on with the engine off? Now that sounds to me like she pulled over for someone that she recognized and was just going to chat. That's something I would have done at her age.
Yeah. That sounds about normal. To me, it seems like possibly, what is spoken, like my gut instinct from the beginning when you were first talking about it, it just sounds like somebody jealous. And so I don't think it was somebody that was a complete stranger. It might not have been somebody that she had any involvement with, but in their mind, maybe she was nice to him or something. You know, it might have been somebody she knew that had formed an infatuation with her, because that's the only thing I can think of that explains taking the card. You know, the card thing is kind of odd. You know, I can't think of anybody that would be bothered with that, you know, but maybe somebody was, and like you said, that she was relaxed enough to have the key on, the radio on, Maybe she pulled over for somebody that she recognized, and they ended up, you know, it might not have had to be anybody impersonating law. It could have been just somebody she knew that they saw him behind her. And what was the date that she died? So it was summer, right?
No, it was February. It was February 4th, right, the day that she went missing.
So it would have been dark. It would have been dark at night.
Right. It was sometime between 7:45 and 8:30. And I try to put myself in the position of the person. And so I try to think, like, well, what would I have done? So I think, okay, say someone was following me and it's nighttime. And I think I know who it is, but I'm not really sure. I can see getting that close to your home and you pull over to see what they want because you think that you're safe. Like, you wouldn't pull over on
right
the road, but yeah, once you got close pretty much in your own driveway, you would feel like, okay, I'm going to pull over and see what this person wants.
And obviously, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, and maybe the part about the radio being on wasn't even on purpose. Maybe she was just nervous and went, or maybe they reached in and turned it off. No, who knows? I don't know.
Well, I mean, she just could have been somebody that she trusted she shouldn't have, you know. So, and that she wasn't expecting that to happen. But.
Well, there are accounts from coworkers that talk about how often Chandra was kind of hit on by different customers right at work. Yeah. She had even received a rose through the drive-through not long before her disappearance. And there's also some talk of her possibly being followed from work a few months before, but nothing concrete.
Now, see, that's odd that you say the rose and then goes back to that flower shop call. And it makes you wonder if somebody was doing that to try to, I don't know, not absolve their guilt, but try to, I don't know. That whole flower shop call, just, it's very, very weird.
I can remember, I was 19, I guess, when I started working at the mall. And you do, as a young girl, you know, it's like you're just right there. It's so easy for people to just come by and say this or that to you. And I know other girls were heavily stalked. It didn't happen to me. Luckily, I mean, I did have that one little stalker guy, but I was never
one
afraid of him.
Right.
Well, he was odd. And now I would be kind of freaked
so
out. But back then, I just felt like, well, that's creepy, but I don't remember actually being afraid of him.
Because you ain't heard all these crazy stories
right
like that now.
But it could have been something like that where she didn't know, you know, she was like me. She didn't think, oh, well, he's harmless,
right,
you know, and then maybe he wasn't harmless.
I bet it was somebody that was infatuated with her and had formed this mental thing and evidently a psychopath and violent and all, and he just got the right opportunity. And probably, I don't know that it was planned. Well,
that people, the local people said that TGNY was a popular place to hang out for teenagers, where they would just park and congregate, you know. So
right,
it could have been they just saw her there and decided to follow her.
Yeah, again, but why take the card? I mean, you gonna re-gift it, or are you gonna? No, I'm just saying.
Well, like a weird souvenir, but it seems it's a pretty big thing to keep up with. But I guess it could have been easily burned and discarded.
Pretty,
it was made out of paper.
It's a pretty big piece of evidence, too. I mean,
right,
holy moly, you know.
But
he might not have been thinking that much through. Might have been the heat of the moment. That's what makes me think it was some kind of jealousy, or even if she wasn't involved with him, he might, you know, people get these attachments, you know, in their head.
All right, but I just also wonder if this was a person who kept her alive for, I mean, up to more than 2 weeks. Where did he keep her at? Did he have his own home? I mean, if it was a young person, if my boys bring a girl here and they're keeping her captive, I'm going to know. And So it makes me think, was it an older person who did have their own home or somewhere off the beaten path where they could keep a person for several days?
Yes, I think so. I don't know, obviously, but I don't get the feeling that this was a young person, you know. I think this is some middle-aged man that had some kind of crush or something. Now, I could be totally off. It could be a total stranger that just happened to see her and you know. But I bet it was somebody from the area, and that somebody that was familiar and probably had seen her or knew her enough to get on a hello basis. Probably enough. I'm telling you, it don't take much for some people. Just one little, right hello.
Oh, and, I know. I think about things that I did. Like I said, with a stalker guy where I didn't protect myself enough, or people I talked to when I was younger, and I could have easily been a subject of a podcast instead of doing a podcast. But luckily I am here, and unfortunately Chandra is not.
Yep.
Now, there has been renewed interest in her case over the years. Now, it's 33 years old, and they're having to work hard to kind of keep it in the news. And she's got friends and family and local people that post about it online. There was even a group of paranormal investigators, Mississippi Paranormal Investigations, and they visited some of the sites. And well, I'm not sure if anything...
I think a ghost took her.
No, I don't think a ghost took her. And I don't think they think... I think they were trying to possibly get some feelings about her spirit and maybe some, energy from the area that might tell them something or get some kind of feeling. And I think they did some recordings, to see if they could pick up something.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm not sure if anything of value was discovered in that. But hey, you know, I can see that.
Doesn't hurt to try.
Right. I would try everything. If it was my child, my loved one, I would be trying whatever.
Get that psychic out there that you didn't really think that much of. What was the one?
Oh, honey, that's Sylvia Brown. She's been dead for a while. If she's doing anything now, she's doing something beyond the grave.
Maybe she'd pass it on.
I'm not a big believer in... I believe in feeling energy and things like that, but I'm not a big believer that you're actually going to be told exactly where the person is or exactly who did
right.
it. But
well,
anyway.
I'm a psychic. This
you
podcast
are.
Is about to be over.
Oh, yes, yeah. It is. Chandra's mother died, unfortunately, in 1994 without ever knowing who did this to her daughter. The death date on her daughter's gravestone was blank then, and it still is today. The general consensus, just like you believe, is that Chandra knew her killer, and I hope that one day we will know him or her also.
Amen.
If you have any information about this case, please call Crime Stoppers at 1-888-8-CRIMES, CRIMES. I want to give a shout out to Arthur Wayne Brown. He wrote a very well written article on this case, and to thank him for his supportive emails. I will link the article on our website. And also, I'm going to post a link to another great site. It's a blog called Muddy Mississippi Justice. And that site has a lot of pictures and good information. I really appreciate you guys listening. Please visit our website, asouthernsleuthpodcast.com. Join us on our Facebook group. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. And we appreciate any kind of input, any kind of communication. And we really appreciate your support.
Thank you guys very much, and stay safe out there.
Remember to share the podcast, because the more people that listen to the cases, the more chances that the right person will hear it and something will happen. It not only can get someone to talk, it can get the authorities to pay more attention to the cases because we know that the barking dog gets the attention. Southern Sleuth Podcast is a production of Cream Dream Studios. All episodes researched and written by Kathy. All music written and performed by Michael.
That's me.